Hello and welcome to Vikings Territory Breakdown Podcast with myself, Joe Oberle, senior writer at VikingsTerritory.com and PurplePTSD.com with my cohort in crime, Mark Craig. He's the NFL insider and Vikings writer from the Star Tribune and StarTribune.com. And we're here to chat up another podcast during the down days of the off season, but it's getting exciting. You know, the Vikings are in for OTAs, and so there's always stuff coming out, but there's always something to talk about. But I guess, Mark, I start off by asking, I asked Brian Flores talked maybe earlier this week. I can't tell, you know, how the weekend, I don't know. But B-Flow, as they called him, had to say, what did you think of his presser and hearing from him recently?
Yeah, I mean, I like the guy. I think he comes with a lot of respect. You know, he doesn't have the, I won't give him the Tomlin, like, you know, Mike Tomlin, boy. As soon as he started talking as a coordinator, as a guy who is more than a position coach, you just were like, wow, this guy's a head coach. Now, obviously, Flores has been a head coach. But I just feel like the way he speaks, the way he's, you know, he's closer in age to the players. They can relate to him in several ways, more to him. I think the guys last year, of course, there's going to be a lot of new faces that are going to be on the team, but I think they wanted to play a little more aggressive. And what I get out of Brian Flores is that, you know, there's a respect level there. He can command a room. His mentality, it's been proven that he's his quote, you know, which describes him to a T, is he was talking about the players. He said, they understand my nature of wanting to be aggressive, but not reckless. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be aggressive all you want and give up 80 yard touchdowns. And I feel like they trust the guy. They like him. He's also the guy that he stood up to the NFL when he had a belief. He was willing to risk his career, risk his future at 42 years of age, or, you know, his early 40s, to stand up to the NFL and say, this isn't right. My interviews weren't right. What they did to me in Miami wasn't right. Rather than just keep your mouth shut. Then Tomlin reached out to him, and, he was with the Steelers last year. So, you know, I like the guy. I think he's going to make a difference now, whether he has the personnel to do all the things he wants and whether he can get him up to speed. I think they're a little short, and we'll talk about, you know, what they could do, you know, later on. But I don't know. I would not be comfortable with the young, unproven, injury prone, all those faces that he has to trust right now.
Scheme can't make enough of a difference.
Not where I think they come up, where they potentially could come up lacking, which is at corner.
Yeah.
You know, go back to 2020 and ask Mike Zimmer coming off a playoff season, what it was like to throw corners out there who weren't ready. You know, that's and go back another one, Leslie Frazier in 2012 or 2013, what he was dealing with at the end of that disastrous season, by the end of that disastrous season, having a punt returner play corner, have a Benny Sapp come off the road, off the street again to come back. You know, that's not a position that you can say, I hope it works. You know, you better have something there.
I remember us singing the praises of Benny Sapp. He had a couple good games there, and then kind of regressed to the mean a little.
Well, you know, I love Benny. The best quote ever was whenever when he comes in, he's like a day into the building, and he's like, "We all gotta like, there has to be a buy-in factor here on this team." And you know, Benny was a great character. He gave it all he had, but Leslie needed. What Leslie needed that year was Antoine Winfield to be re-signed and not Josh Freeman.
Right.
He brought in.
You mentioned, and I don't know if this might not be the right term for it, but, you know, Brian Flores, you know, stood up to the NFL, lost his job at head coach, and then he went to the Steelers. Is this kind of a rehab tour for him when, you know, and how do you think he's doing? Because now he's on his second place since that, and he's trying to work his way back probably to a head coaching job. Do you think that's what this is, or is this just a case of Kevin O'Connell and Kwesi Noah, a good defensive coordinator, and they brought him in?
Well, I think, you know, you can't worry about what's going to happen in 2024. I mean,
we're Vikings fans.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing if And it was good, you know, it got mixed in with, like, Zimmer with his offensive coordinators. It got mixed in. Oh, Zimmer goes through offensive coordinators. You know, he can't keep any offensive coordinators. He, you know, he can't work with them. Well, two of them got head coaching jobs, and that was a good thing, you know. And one of them became NFL coach of the year as a rookie head coach in Cleveland. I mean, who sees that coming? You go to Cleveland as, you know, I used to tell Kevin Stefanski, that's your, you know, the first time he didn't get the job, I was like, oh, you're better off. You don't want to go to Cleveland. That's a career killer. And then, you know, he goes to Cleveland, wins coach of the year. So, you know, if I'm the Vikings, if I'm Kevin O'Connell, if I'm Kwesi, I want this guy to be a head coach in 2 years or 3 years, because that means he will have done something, you know, he will have turned around one of the worst defenses in the league with a scheme that was his own, that he owns. He's not coming in and just riding, you know, some coattails. He's coming in to change. He's coming in it's a very unique situation. He's coming in on a 13-win team to change the biggest weakness that it has and make it better. And if he does that, he'll be a head coach again.
I'm just curious, wonder why he came. I know he had some history with Kevin O'Connell. They coached together somewhere. I can't remember where, but this would not be coming in here. Wouldn't have been the choicest job out there last season to come in and rehabilitate.
I see what you're saying with the personnel and everything. And he was a coach in New England when O'Connell was there. So they have a little bit of a history there. So O'Connell has seen him from a distance, you know, being a quarterback and this guy being, I think it was a linebackers coach at the time. You know, he's worked under Belichick. But I think you come here, I give him credit because he was still in the running for the Cardinals job. And I feel like he probably felt, I can't speak for him, but, you know, you take another, you know, and he did well in Miami. He had back-to-back 9-win seasons, didn't make the playoffs. But, you know, with what he was working with and an owner that was telling him to tank games and all that stuff, he did well. And I think he sees coming here as a defensive coordinator with that offense and with a 13-win team. You know, he's now in a division, you know, a division where, you know, they should win the division. This is a better job as defensive coordinator than I think going to Arizona and starting over there. And, you know, maybe only making it 2 years before you get fired.
Right.
So I thought it's a pretty good job for him to be walking into.
You mentioned the quote you let off with that quote about, you know, trying to be aggressive but not reckless. That's a pretty fine line to walk in the NFL, isn't it? I mean, because you can't you got to be aggressive. But it's hard to pull back and sometimes not go over that line, don't you think, for these guys, because it's such a fast game?
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, anything – if we see a defender breathe heavy on the quarterback, we're going to be – and that wasn't like that the entire year. Right. I mean, they opened with the Packers, and we were all singing Donatello's praises. And, oh, my gosh, this is amazing. You know, look what they did to Aaron Rodgers. But it just wasn't sustainable. And when Za'Darius got hurt middle of the year, that became, you know, a huge, you couldn't rush to only four when one of them only had one leg. So, there were so many times, you know, talking to these guys, I won't name any names, but talking to them, they were like, I hear you. Cause I would be always like, why don't you go after the quarterback more? And yeah. I was like, yeah, you know, he trusted that system to a fault and was only here for 1 year. But yeah, it's a balance, especially whenever you don't have, you know, you don't have a Deion Sanders, you don't have a shutdown corner. Like Belichick could, and when Flores was in New England, they could, or even in Miami, they could do that because they had would have a little more experience at corner and guys that could take away a side of the field. Now, I don't know that they have that right now. But if they do, it hasn't been proven.
You mentioned a lot of new faces, and you know Flores doesn't want to put too much on the young players. But truth be told, and without getting into particulars, we'll do that in the next segment. The Vikings are going to need some of those players to step up and really perform, and they're going to have to learn this new system, and they're going to have to, you know, get up to speed really quick. That's going to be tough.
Yeah, and you're asking guys to get up to speed quick. and also asking guys to, hey, I know you've been injury prone. You're in your early 20s and you've been injury prone since high school in the case of Andrew Booth. But hey, we need you to play 17 games and stay healthy and, you know, all that. That's a big gamble. And, you know, frankly, they're counting on some guys that are, it's scary to be counting on them because I love a Caleb Evans, but in today's NFL, he might be one concussion away from, you know, we're doing a retirement for a 23-year-old guy or 22 or whatever he is, you know, because he had three, you know, he was in the concussion protocol three times last year. These guys are so much more aware of, and I think, you know, they're not only aware of the concussions and what they can do and everything, but they're more willing to say, hey, I'm not going to risk my future for this. So I don't know his personality. I don't know if he's that kind of guy, but we've seen over the last 10 years of guys that are in their early 20s saying, hey, that's enough. You know, I'm not going to do it. So, you know, that's a risk. The concussions are a risk. The Booth always having legs and hips and groins and problems. And so that, yeah, you're right. There's a ton of guys that they're, hey, we hope it works.
Yeah, right. Speaking of Caleb Evans, he spoke yesterday. Andrew Kramer from your paper wrote a story about Flores yesterday. And in that, Evans was quoted on how, you know, you got to be versatile to play for Flores. That's kind of a hallmark of his team, isn't it? Can you describe that a little bit, how he likes to move players around at different spots and such?
Well, yeah, I mean, you come from the, you know, Belichick was, you know, everybody says, oh, Belichick only won because Tom Brady. That's a bunch of crap. You know, it certainly helps having Tom Brady, but there were games, you know, there were runs where they had the number one defense and there's a Super Bowl that they won 13-3, you know. It's not just poo-poo like, oh, Belichick, you know. And part of Belichick's, you know, greatness is, you know, like getting guys that could play multiple positions and you could shift in and out of 3-4 or 4-3. You know, the guys that wouldn't have great stats. That's why you don't see a ton of like defenders from the Patriots or aren't Hall of Famers all over the place like you would see. Of course, they had like two different types, two different dynasties during Brady's career, but had guys that could play different multiple positions. And he always, when he was great defenses, he always had that shutdown corner, you know, that could do that. And, you know, then he had guys that could move around. So, yeah, Evans, in his case, he's probably referring to having to play inside, outside, nickel. You know, Murphy's a guy that can play inside, outside. But he's another guy that, like, he's your grizzled veteran right now. And he only played five games last year, and he's, you know, still young. So I feel like they need more there.
Here's my big question on Flores. You know, he says that in that story, he said, talked about how you have to build an identity on defense in this league, in the NFL. Is he going to be around long enough to do that?
Well, yeah, I think if you come out of the gates hot, you can build an identity. Yeah, that's the thing about last year's team. Their identity, which to me is unsustainable. And Zimmer used to always talk about turnovers. I mean, it's great to have turnovers, but he wanted to see a guy defended closely. He'd rather have I don't know if he'd rather, but it was more sustainable to really have tight coverage, even when you're in zone, carry your guy through the zone, as opposed to living and dying on turnovers. Well, this team did a lot of living and dying on turnovers at, you know, at the end of games last year.
Yeah.
It helped them in Buffalo. You know, it was the best game of the year in the NFL. But you know, that's not always going to happen. So to me, their identity will be aggressive. Last year's identity was kind of turnovers at the end of games. Well, that went away. You know, I think more sustainable is an aggressive, you know, exotic blitzes or putting Harrison Smith back in a role where he was more like Zimmer. Mm-hmm. He's getting older, how much more he can do that, but I think he's got one more year of being able to play that way. So take advantage of some of this, you know, being aggressive, you know, going after the quarterback, using the home field advantage. So those are that's the identity he's talking about.
Is, you know, people always talk about, Zimmer talked about turnovers. We're talking here about an aggressive style. Can that aggressive style put you in position better to get turnovers? I mean, turnovers are happenstance to a degree, but there's also there's some scheme behind, right? Maybe to maybe put yourself in a position to get more, or is it just total luck or failure?
Well, you know, I mean, last year at this time we were still new with the Donatel. You know, we were kind of looking at what the 18 Bears did, and and Donatel and the defensive coordinator at that point.
Team. Eric Patton? No.
No, Fangio. Fangio. You know, that was a great, you know, but they also had Khalil Mack, and they had, you know, they had great players too. But yeah, they had a lot of takeaways. And you know, we were still kind of like, well, you know, this defense, you know, you got eyes on the quarterback. You're kind of back, and that's how you get turnovers. Well, to some degree, yeah. But I think the turnovers come from, you know, pressuring the quarterback and you know, their schedule, you know, they play the NFC South with all their, you know, quarterbacks aren't very good.
Yeah.
Now they're probably going to play a rookie quarterback from Carolina. The division now is, you know, like Goff in Detroit is really kind of changing the narrative on his career, but he's still a guy that last year we're like, man, they got to get after him, and they just didn't do it. And right. They picked him apart different times. But you know, you don't have Rodgers twice a year. So I think you can be aggressive. You can go after the quarterback, and you just can't let the offense stay in rhythm. Otherwise you're going to get killed, and you're not going to force turnover.
I think after what we watched last year and the shell defense of Ed Donatel, and seemed like they were laying off the line so much, to see this aggressive formation and see, or this aggressive scheme and watch them go, I think Vikings fans are, I'm going to be pumped just to see how they do. I mean, you always, in NFL on this day, you always want to see points, but I really want to see what this defense does, because I think it will teach me something different about, you know, how coaches approach the game, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Zimmer at the end, whenever injuries and everything, his defense has tailed off, but Zimmer, you know, gave this market some great defense for, you know, pretty good stretch. Now,
absolutely did.
You know, 2015, 17 was the defense in 17, 19 is they made the playoffs because of that defense. And, but then it just kind of fell apart whenever they couldn't afford to keep that team together. So yeah, it was
Harrison Smith would line up, because you always knew there was something going on with him in Zimmer's defense. You go,
yeah, I just think they need to get back to some of that. And I think, you know, hopefully that they do have the personnel to do it. I think they could be more aggressive. They might have to be more aggressive because of their personnel. You know, I mean, guys aren't gonna be able to cover forever. It's going to be interesting to see how he pieces it all together and just how many new faces he could be looking at.
Well, that's the perfect segue, because that's what we're going to do in the next segment. We're going to break down the defense by position a little bit and see, do the Vikings have the personnel to play this aggressive style defense? So we'll take a quick break and come on back to the Vikings Territory Breakdown Podcast. All right, folks, welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown Podcast with Mark Craig from the Star Tribune. Mark, defense is key. That's what it's going to be, I think, for me this year. I mean, I think the offense is kind of, I won't say status quo. I think they've improved when you look at Josh Oliver being added, and you look at another season with Hockenson, and they got that first round draft pick. So I think, and you know, we don't know what's going to happen at running back yet, but I think they'll be maybe a titch better, but I think they'll be the same. The defense has got to be the thing for this team. And we want to look at the Vikings on defense this year and on their roster and see how they stack up with this B-Flow defense. I bet you just love when I call them B-Flow, don't you, Mark?
So I always like when people ask questions that are in the media and we use all their nicknames and stuff. That's kind of like a nails on a chalkboard for me. It's like, you know, we're not in the trenches with them, so let's not pretend we are.
I wrote George Mikan's biography, and I was talking to him once, and he used to tell me about, I interviewed Vern Mickelson. And he always said, he was talking about Sid, who would come down in the locker room, you know, who is, you know, at the Tribune, but he was also kind of general manager of the team. And Sid always tried to get inside like he was one of the guys there. And he just says, like, you know, you come see Sid come in talking and rubbing elbows with the players like he was one of them. And he just kind of fell flat a little bit, but, you know.
Did you interview Sid? For you're talking about George Mikan and defense on football. God, how old are you, Joe? Are you like 200 years old?
Sid was the hardest guy to get. He was the last one. He kept telling me, kept putting me off. And I just got really mad at him. I finally said, I got to have you now. I got to do this because I need you in order to write the book. And so he begrudgingly gave an interview. Well, I didn't realize he was in the process of writing his own book and telling these stories that I was trying to get out of him at the same time. So,
Royce, you had a perfect thing on Sid. This real quick. I think he wrote about Bud Grant's ceremony, the memorial, the public memorial. And it was like one of the touching moments. I think Chad Hartman said that first time one of the only times he saw his dad cry is when Bud Grant asked him to present him at the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
And when he went in the Hall of Fame, which is a huge honor. I mean, you were on the stage with these guys, and that was when I was on the front steps of the Hall of Fame. And I remember being there. I was in Canton working. And I was like, I didn't know who Sid Hartman was at that point, but I found out eventually. But it was like when they were talking, I think Bob Hagen might have told the story. When you're talking about, we were working on Sid's speech. And the only thing, it only needed one thing. It needed to be, when they were reworking it, it needed to be less about Sid and more about Bud. And that might be how you describe Sid Hartman. Every time someone would pass, Sid would write something and it would be like, it's a little more about Sid than it was about the person who passed.
I was surprised as heck when Bud chose him as his presenter. You know, you knew they were friends. I didn't know they were that tight. And you found out since that they really were. So he deserved that. He deserved good for Sid. I'm happy that he was able to do that. But that's funny to hear that. Anyway, okay, Mark, we're just avoiding the inevitable. What do we got at left cornerback? We got coming back with that stalwart Andrew Booth Jr. Hopefully we can see him play this year. Is probably penciling in at your starter. You got Jo'Juan Williams, a free agent they picked up next, and then Kalon Barnes, followed by another guy, CJ Colden Jr. and Jalen Williams. That's who they got penciled in at on the depth chart for the left cornerback position. What do you think of that?
Well, yeah, I don't think you could read those names all you want, but that those were off-season training camp guys. And thanks for letting me know some of those. I didn't never even heard of them.
I had to go to I had to go find it.
To me, it's, you know, you're looking at the top three that they have. I know we just take it by corner. We'll be here all day. Okay. So it's, to me, it's, you know, you've got, you know, Booth and Evans as your
Evans,
I guess, and your outside starters.
Yep.
And then, you know, Murphy is the guy that's going to be the slot, you know. I don't care who's behind them. There's maybe some guys that can step in if they need to, but I think no matter what order they put them in and behind them, there's not enough there. There's not enough for me, there's not enough there. And we'll talk about it later, but they need another veteran presence. Patrick Peterson, you know, moved on, but they need that type of veteran presence to be in there. And there's some guys out there that are waiting and looking, and we'll talk about it in a little bit. But this is I think would be a pretty attractive place to come for those 1 year, you know, tail of the end of the career type guys that could help them.
Well, the Vikings have been king of picking up someone like that, like, you know, for a song, because they've had the need for it. But that's really concerning because, you know, this guy's not injury prone in this position. It's tough, but I'm surprised Byron Murphy. I didn't know he was a nickelback. So they're going to slot him there. He's not playing one of the outsides, huh?
Well, I mean, whenever there's just two corners, I mean, he would be on the outside and then he slides in. So Antoine Winfield used to do that. Different guys used to do that. And we should mention the two rookies, especially the third round draft pick. Now that's, you know, there is some depth there because I would assume that, you know, these guys,
Mekhi, you know, Blackman, is that who you're telling?
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not saying that everybody else is this practice squad or training camp body or whatever. They, you know, they did invest two picks. One of them is you got it in front of you,
Mikhail, the guy that, or Tay Gowan. No,
no, the guy that they picked in the fourth round or fifth round or whatever.
Jalen Williams, maybe.
No. He can play a safety corner and also nickelback. So, you got those, but I still think they need, it cries out for whenever they Dalvin Cook's not going to come back onto the roster. So there's that money that's there. I think that, that's when maybe you sign, a guy at that position or another edge rusher.
Yeah. All right. Well, I just showed you my studying up for this one. I need to go back and look at these rookies better just to get their names and see, they are going to keep the rookies that they drafted for sure. They will be on the team, one would think, unless they fall completely off their nut. But anyway, let's slide to the safety positions. You got Harrison Smith and Cam Bynum as your starters, but you got Josh Metellus, Louis Seen, and Theo Jackson as your depth. Louis Seen doesn't, at least not yet, you can't pencil him into one of those spots, can you?
I wouldn't think so, because you got to see him, take contact again. But, you're going in looking at probably six new starters, and then your hope is that, I'm hoping it's one more, because I'm hoping that it's Louis Seen stepping in and acting like and staying healthy and acting like he's the other guy we didn't mention as we're talking about needing to stay healthy. He shatters his leg in his fourth game or third game or whatever. Didn't play any defense. You want him to overtake Bynum, and then Bynum would have Bynum's going to have a role in some regard.
Right.
He can play multiple positions. He's not really good enough to play. He was a corner in college. And I remember they were asking, well, why are you a safety in the NFL when he came in? It's like he gave some big, long answer. And I think I nudged someone, said, because he's not good enough to play, not fast enough to play corner. That's wow. Usually, if you boil it down in a nutshell, when the guy ends up as a tweener or whatever, and he ends up at safety, he's not fast enough to play corner. So that's typically,
Humble.
That to me is you want it to be seven faces, because you want Louis Seen to be starting.
Got your John Madden hands going there.
I'm trying to keep them down, but I can't do it.
What?
Boom.
We got Josh Metellus, who in spot duty last year, he would flash every once in a while, made some plays. I didn't mind when he was in the game. I think there's some depth at that position if, in fact, Louis Seen steps up and you got Metellus, behind Harrison Smith. So, I feel good about that position to a degree.
Positions. I agree. Bynum became a better player than we thought.
Yep.
Seen has all the ability in the world, whether he can stay healthy. Harrison Smith still has at least a year left in him. Metellus, I just like Metellus's work ethic. I like his personality. I like the fact that he talks to us and it's good. So that helps. It's always nice to have a guy who can play and not be a jerk.
Yep.
So to me, I like that, but I like what they have there and I like what they can do there with the versatility and Metellus. And obviously Metellus is, I know special teams is being kind of eliminated from the NFL, but Metellus, until we get to that point, Metellus is also probably their best special teams player as well.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to the linebacker position. And this next stuff is going to be tougher because God only knows what they're going to do. Isn't there going to be some 3-4 and some 4-3? And is Danielle Hunter, if he shows up, they got him listed as left outside linebacker. That's kind of what he was last year. But previously, he was a defensive end. So you got him, Danielle Hunter, Pat Jones, and Luigi Villain, I guess. There's also some guy named Whitey Benton. He's a kicker. Never mind, I got this. Anyway,
well, if they're lining up kickers at I left outside linebacker, Joe, I don't like that move. I don't like any kickers playing on deep. Although the punter could be a nose tackle. I think
that's true. That's true. So there you go. I should have him on here. Danielle Hunter.
Danielle Hunter, I would imagine by the time we get to training camp, he'll be happy because maybe I would assume his contract, they'll do something with his contract. People that say you need to trade Danielle Hunter or whatever, I, that's if you want to just take a giant axe and put a hole inside of your defense, you know, trade Danielle Hunter and because they're not in a position right now where they're at as a franchise. And you know, Aaron Rodgers just left the division, and you won 13 games, and your offense is good. You don't know how long Kirk Cousins is going to be here. They need Danielle Hunter. You know, they need him. You know, he kind of came on toward the end of last year and a little more comfortable in the defense. And they can also use him in ways where he's not covering a tight end downfield. I guess you got to do some of that when you're playing 3-4, but there were some times where it's like, well, you know, what in the world is he doing where he was? But maybe this defense Flores has is a little more smart in that regard. And I mean, even Jared Allen back in which now seems like the Stone Ages would occasionally, you know, fire zone blitz would drop back. But, you know, it should be very minimal on the times that Danielle does that.
So should we expect more out of Pat Jones this year?
I just see him as a kind of he's a backup guy. You know, your outside linebackers aren't going to play 100% of the snaps. So he's a guy that you want to see maybe play 10, 15, 20%. 20 be tops. They have those guys that can do that. Can sort of like DJ Wonnum. I guess he'd have him on the other side, but they have that, you know, I just feel like that's another position that they could do it. You know, you go out and get one of those pass rushers for hire. Who might be a little later in his career, but would want to be involved with a team that's pretty good.
Wow, he said they're pretty good. Weak side linebacker, they got Jordan Hicks as your guy, and then Troy Dye behind him. And I got to mention Ivan Pace Jr., who they picked up, I think, undrafted, wasn't he? Wasn't Pace one of those undrafted guys they paid right out after the draft was over? I think so.
I mean, to me, that those two spots, and they haven't, you know, Dye is basically your guy that would float.
Yeah.
I guess in a perfect world, if he's cheaper, I would still like to have Eric Kendricks there. I'm not going to drink the Kool-Aid to the point where I'm celebrating Eric Kendricks being gone.
No.
Because it's like, well, you know, he's over 30 now, and he didn't play that well, and we don't need him. You know,
Brian didn't take him long to find a job.
So to me, you know, I'd still like to have Eric Kendricks around, and you know, that was his first year in that defense. Might not have played the best, but he's still, you know, leading tackler 7 out of 8 years.
Yeah.
I had a nose for the ball. I think he's going to be missed, but I do like Asamoah. I love his potential, but he's not going to hit the ground and be all pro on day one. But I do think that Asamoah is going to be a very good player, but it's just a matter of how long is it going to take. So, you know, it takes
they had to do that bit. For a contract. I mean, it was such a shame. Eric Kendricks is going to go down in the history of some of the greatest linebackers in this franchise. There's no two ways about it. And you had, you know, it's a shame that contracts forced him out of here. I mean, I know why they made the decision and such, but yeah, I'm with you. I wish he was here. Play and you know, another year of tutelage for Asamoah, and they start playing together and just go crazy. I mean, that's a couple of guys that I'd want on the field. But
yeah, it's just it's different, you know, like situations like Harrison Smith. If Harrison Smith had taken the same stance, not taking the pay cut, he'd be gone too. So sometimes that happens, sometimes it doesn't. You know, Greenway, tail end of his career, was given money back.
Yeah,
Brian Robeson, you know, kind of the same thing. I just never got the – I don't know if they even asked Kendricks. I think maybe they saw Asamoah as the guy to move in. They saw Hicks as the more affordable guy that they were comfortable with. So they re-signed Hicks, you know, and then they got a big savings on Eric's contract. So, it had to be done financially because of where they were at.
They didn't have the history Zimmer had probably with Kendricks, you know. There was not that emotional attachment. They could go and make that business decision, as it were. I would think it's too bad. But then we saw the Vikings picked up Marcus Davenport, who's a big question mark, but has a potential upside that's pretty exciting. Got DJ Wonnum and Andre Carter all listed on the right outside linebacker position. What do you see there, Mark?
Well, you know, I see Davenport is a guy – you know, he's got the pedigree. He was a first round draft pick, but the team that drafted him, you know, they didn't put a fifth year thing on him. He's a first round pick, and they didn't put the fifth year option on him. That, you know, he's an underachiever. So he's an underachiever coming into a defensive coordinator who's probably an overachiever, or a much more type, you know, A mentality. You know, it's key for him to be turned around, to be, you know, and I would imagine that Flores being involved, he's obviously satisfied with the guy's personality. Does he want to, you know, use this opportunity to be great? Because I think it's there. The ability is there. It's just it has never surfaced consistently. So I like the fact that we're talking about him as opposed to someone who maybe is just going to be a career backup forever and say, well, yeah, we hope he like takes a step. I feel like there's a step there for him to take. So I like it, but I'm, you know, it's another question mark that's will impact the season, you know, in a big way.
Well, speaking of steps, we're going to step aside here real quick and take another break, and we'll be back, talk about the defensive line and some more things on the defense in this all-defensive show, Vikings Territory Breakdown. So come on back. Okay, folks, welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown with Mark Craig from the Star Tribune. Mark's breaking down the defense for us. And we're up to the defensive line, which to me is a quagmire. I mean, they lost some players. They got some players. I don't know if it was a net gain in what they lost and what they got. But some of the names we got, left defensive end, Dean Lowry. And that one I can't even pronounce, so I'm not saying it. Then we got the nose tackle, Kyrus Tonga, and Roy Jacqueline, I think he was a draft pick. Jacqueline Roy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then at right defensive end, Harrison Phillips, backed up by Jonathan Bullard. And the rest names are probably won't matter that much. Mark, the defensive line, what are the Vikings going to do there this year? They lost, you know, some guys inside. They lost Adarius Smith as he's an outside linebacker, but, you know, depending what you call him. I consider him the same in that kind of defense. But anyway, I'll quit babbling and let you talk. How about that?
Old guys talking defense, Joe, on a holiday. Boy, we're going to pack them in on this.
People are going to get to the end and they're going to play.
Wait, I don't want to go to the cabin. I want to listen to these old guys talk about defense. Where were we? I see Lowry and Harrison Phillips. I had like higher expectations, or I thought Harrison Phillips could have owned this town. His personality, kind of a bit larger than life personality, great in the community. He didn't have like a real impactful year, I don't think. Not that he was a bad player, but I'm just saying it wasn't like this. I just don't see any of those guys. Lowry's a steady player, comes from Green Bay, is durable. He's got the experience, which is good, but I don't see him as like this impact. You know, be able to rush the passer, or and the nose tackle is basically unproven. He's a big guy, but man, it's just, you know, I don't think that Dalvin Tomlinson was worth what Cleveland gave him. It would have been kind of nice if Cleveland hadn't overspent and maybe Dalvin comes back. And
yeah,
but in saying that, I've you know, even going back to last year when we were talking about defensive line, I was underwhelmed by what they had. And you know, I understand in passing situations, you in this defense, you'll like Za'Darius Smith a lot of times would run on nickel. He would be rushing over the center or the guard. So It's, you know, and you're not just getting this there. They line up and they all just stay in the same spot and go. There's some moving around, especially this year. You're going to see some moving around. But I'd like to see more from the defensive line. Maybe Lowry, you know, has a spark. But I don't see it. I don't see a. Not going to say they're bad, but I got to look and see and wait. There's just not a lot of juice there, I don't think.
Yeah, and it's really important for this team. You know, I mean, you talked about the cornerbacks earlier. Last year they were struggling because, you know, you've got it. They work in tandem with the defensive line. The defensive line's got to get to the quarterback to help the cornerbacks, especially when you're not that good. And now when you got to – a new group coming in, they need that help even more. And I'm not sure if that's on this roster from the defensive line. Would you agree, disagree?
Well, yeah, the 3-4, I mean, obviously the a big, you know, the edge rushers are your linebackers. So it's that front seven. That's, you know, that having those three guys, they, you know, they got obviously have to be good against the run, and they have to, I don't see a lot of like the quickness that to get, you know, like Dalvin had a little bit of quickness to him, but still even he wasn't like off the charts, I don't think. It's also really rare to find that, you know, that three, you know, like the guy from Philadelphia that went on to San Francisco, that type of interior pass rusher where you can, you know, you can wreak havoc on the inside as opposed to just occupying a blocker. I'd like to see him step up, and Lowry gives you some hope that there'll be a little more there, but Harrison Phillips, maybe another year.
Yeah.
In a similar type of defense, maybe he steps up a little more, but I want to see more from that group.
What, you know, we hear when Brian Flores is asked about his scheme, and earlier on this offseason, he famously said 3-4-4-3. You probably see, you know, depend who are we going to play? Who are we playing? That's so it makes it say that it could go either way. What are we going to primarily see? Are we going to see a 3-4 defense and then occasionally see a 4-3? Or is it going to be all over the place, or is it going to be a 4-3? You know, and what does Bill Hunter think?
It's a 3-4. Even he said at the end of that was like, you know, 3-4, you know, 3-4. But there's so many different things that he could be doing with it. Like, you know, in some of these defenses, you know, the Packers jump out at me as a team, you know, I guess when Pettine was there, or you would see, you know, sometimes you'd see one down lineman or two down linemen I think you're probably going to see, I think we've already seen it in the limited amount of time they've shown us is three safety defense. You have three corners, but you have, you know, three safeties. And so they're looking for guys that can do a lot of different things. And then it allows them to maybe surprise people and Belichick was great at it, but Belichick also, and his, you know, he could spot guys. Richard Seymour he's a Hall of Fame. Get in last year. He's a Hall of Famer who doesn't have the ton of sacks. His stats are not Hall of Fame, but you look at what he did and where he was positioned, and you know, he could play nose tackle. He could play on the end. He could play, you know. So you find those special types of players. I don't see that they have it on defensive line, but maybe Cam Bynum's a guy that has some versatility. Byron Murphy's a guy that maybe has it. So if you bring in another edge rusher, you'd have maybe three kind of.
Right. Yeah.
And if you bring in an older guy, and we'll talk about it later, but you bring in an older guy, he's more willing to like, hey, I'm not looking to start. I'm just looking to knock down the quarterback 10 times and get another deal next year. You know, you're gun for hire is at that position.
Yeah. All right. Well, here's the key question for me. And then you touched on it earlier. You talked about Leslie Frazier's defense where he's pulling people in off the street. You've got Mike Zimmer, who's always said you can never have enough cornerbacks. Give me the secondary, the cornerback position, the safety position, linebackers, and the line. Do the Vikings have enough depth to make this, you know, because there's so many people that have injury issues, they really need the depth more so than they have in the past. Do they have it, do you think, in general on this defense?
No, there's two positions, two key positions.
That's the end.
I think they need, you know, there's guys out there.
Who's out there?
Are we ready to talk about them?
Well, cornerback, they need some more people.
I think so, yeah. And I would go out and get another edge rusher. Now, granted, these would have to be, you know, guys. There's guys out there that are probably out there for they're shopping for better, the best team, the best situation. But they're probably guys who are one-year deals or guys that could be had for team-friendly, well, you know, Rob Brzezinski, you know, doing the hocus pocus and making it work financially. This is all, you know, based on the fact that I think Dalvin Cook's played his last down as a Viking. You know, that opens up some more money, and you can maybe add a guy if it's affordable.
That's the key. I mean, what are these guys doing out there at this point? And isn't their chance at a contract, really a good one, really diminishing because nobody has any cap space left at this point?
Well, the ones I'm looking at are guys that are older, guys that are looking for, you know, one more swing at the table when it comes to contract, or take a 1 year thing and, you know, see what happens next year, or they're trying to win. You know, there you go. Some of them still want to win.
Who you got?
Besides, I was talking to, I played golf with Jeff Diamond the other day, and we were talking about this, and these two guys to me are guys that I looked at as I was thinking about what we would do for this podcast, and he mentioned them as well. So one of us was a GM, a great GM in the NFL, and the other one wasn't. So I'll let you know the contender and the pretender in that situation. Yeah.
All right.
And I got my butt kicked on my first round of the year too. So, yeah. You know, the guys I looked at
were off the DL. That's okay. You're coming off the DL.
Yeah. After I got my 6 strokes out of him last year to start the season, I got no sympathy when it came to the back. You know, I was like, Jeff was like, no, yeah, we're not, no way, buddy. So thanks, Jeff. Justin Houston, he's 34. He would definitely fall into that 1 year old pass rusher, hired gun type of guy. You know, 9.5 sacks last year. He's still out there, you know, to be the, you know, the Chiefs, you know, why isn't he back with the Chiefs? Or right. Why isn't he, you know, why hasn't he moved on? I think a guy, you're in that situation, you're that age, you're saying, hey, you know, where's the best situation? You know, Jared Allen at the end of his career was a hired gun who went to Carolina, went to Chicago, and then midway through the season in Chicago, he, you know, didn't work out with it because they went to a 3-4. He didn't fit that defense. So he, you know, Carolina picks him up and he ends up playing a Super Bowl for the Panthers. Chris Dolman, he ended up coming back to the Vikings as a hired gun late in his career and had, you know, he probably didn't start any games, but I think he had double digit sacks or whatever it was at an advanced age. So those older edge rushers, if you need them to boost something and you've got a good team, you know, they're not going to go and play for Houston or whatever. But you know, the Vikings are in a situation. I feel like, you know, they're looking at winning this year. They have the offense. If it can work out financially, you get a Justin Houston. And the corner would be a Marcus Spears. I think they need – and you know, he's 30. He won't be 31 until January. Played for – you know, obviously played for the Chiefs, played for the Ravens, an experienced guy. He's got like 30-some career interceptions. You know, guy at the end, toward the end of his career, you can get for a 1 year deal, I would think. That's what they, especially that cornerback position. I think they need an experienced guy there to go with what all the other stuff that they have.
Do you see these guys, these you've described them as, you know, maybe old guys looking for a chance, one more swing at the plate or what have you. Are they looking to start? Are they looking for depth? You know, I suppose they're looking to start because then they get more money in that contract. But, you know, and are the Vikings looking for starters, do you think, and the people?
Well, if you bring in Marcus Peters, he's going to start.
Okay.
If you bring in, say, a Justin Houston, he probably doesn't start. You have Daniil, but just because he doesn't start doesn't mean there isn't an opportunity. If Davenport, you know, wakes up and realizes his potential and becomes that player who is a number one pick, say Daniil gets his contract, he's happy with his contract, you know, he's a little more comfortable with however B-flow, as you call him, is we're running the defense. Wouldn't you like to have another guy? I would love to have a third guy. And wow, you know, it's suddenly you got three guys. If it can work out financially, that's the two areas I'd be looking at, where I'm thinking, you know, we need two more at least one of those two, and I'd take the corner over the edge rusher. But man, if you could add two more pops to the defense, I think that would make a big difference.
Do you you mentioned it earlier, Dalvin Cook saying goodbye to him, but I keep seeing stories this week that he could still be here. They keep saying, "Oh, there's still a chance." He's looking for he's willing to take a pay cut or something. What the heck would they do with that, with all those running backs, if they kept him around? They certainly wouldn't get these guys on defense, which is what they need. They need them more than they need Dalvin Cook, don't they?
Well, yeah, but there has to be these. I throw out these two guys, and they're not hanging in a closet like a coat, you know, that you go reach in and buy. You know, they have a say. They have a say in this. But yeah, I mean, what you do is you. I'd like to see them, you know, like do what they were saying last year. With if Dalvin were to come back, let's see you throw the ball more to him, like you were saying you were going to do. But yeah, that's be like what kind of what they had last year, running back. You know, I'm willing, you know, because Dalvin, because he, you know, the third and one, when third and short, when they needed yardage, I just didn't feel he was the guy that yep. could get it done. He didn't. And now that's obviously it's not all his fault, but you know, they got the Oliver as a tight end. Madison's been re-signed. You know, to me, if I'm taking my money, my allotment, I'm looking at what I'm talking about as opposed to Dalvin. And that's, you know, that's also acknowledging that Dalvin's a great player. Just his contract does not fit what they need to play by the rules under the cap.
All right. Well, let's finish up with three quick hitters for you. First, I want to ask you, who do you think is going to be the defensive breakout player of the year? I'm gonna take some low-hanging fruit just because he didn't get to play much last year. I'm gonna say Andrew Booth Jr. I believe in him. I believe he's finally gonna get over the injury bug. He's gonna be the guy. Who do you got?
All right, well, I'll lead off by saying I don't believe in him. I don't believe in his track record, but I would love to see him. It'd be nice to see a young guy like that who's had to deal with so much stuff.
Yep.
Would love to see him overcome and I would say Asamoah. I have a feeling that his intensity.
Come on.
I don't think he broke out last year. Broke out on special teams, maybe.
Yeah, he did.
I would say, and this is a big one for me because I'm still like would love to have Kendricks there, but I feel like this guy can play at a speed that, like, to me, if you play fast, if you're playing wrong and you're still playing fast, you have a chance to be really good. And this guy plays fast. I think he wants to be good. I think he has a personality where he really he took advantage of playing a year with Kendricks. He's taken advantage of a year, and that some of that sounds like cliche and stuff. But there, when you're around him, sometimes you know when a guy could be why a guy is good and why a guy is bad because they just one wants it, one doesn't. Mm-hmm. And then I have a feeling like this guy, it's just human nature. Sometimes we don't think they're human beings. But they are, and they all everyone's different. They're not no two of us the same, and I feel like these guys. He is a guy that could play. He may not know everything he's doing right away, but he's going to play fast, and he's going to be a disruptor. I feel.
Okay, question number two: who's your most underrated player? I'm going to go with this guy, and I know you don't underrate him, but just what you might have heard from me earlier, I think Josh Metellus. I think he's done well in spot duty. And you talked about what a great special teams player he is. I think he's underrated and you might see more out of him this year. So he's my guy.
Yeah. On defense. He would be a good pick. He'd probably be my pick if I had to go in first. I would say Bynum because Bynum's a guy that even I've said, well, you know, why isn't Sean starting ahead of him? Why isn't this guy starting ahead of him? Why? You know, I think he's become a guy who is, under the radar, even though he started every game last year. And it's like you just keep wanting like, well, he's good, but, you know, well, maybe he's good enough. Maybe he makes the rookie wait. And if that situation, then, you know, the rookie's eventually going to start because Harrison Smith is probably in his last year here.
Right,
so,
right.
But if Bynum can hold him off for another year and because he, you know, the thing about Sean getting hurt was Sean couldn't beat out Bynum before that happened. He was in no No, granted, he had some injuries in training camp that, helped contributed to that, but Seed was not up to speed mentally as well before he got hurt. So Bynum would be, I guess, my pick in that situation.
Okay, last one. Is there anyone that's overrated? And I'm going to say this, and I don't even know it because I've not studied the guy, but just coming in here with his track record, what we've heard about him, you got to say Marcus Davenport, because he was a former first-round pick who just kind of underperformed. Was it the Saints? The Saints I had?
Saints, yeah.
Yeah. So that's more low-hanging fruit for me. I just asked a question.
Well, I don't care if it's I don't care if we're going to double up on him. We're going to double-team it, Joe, with all of our might. Right.
You know, we're going to inspire him.
Kirk Cousins should be have no problem standing straight and trusting you and me holding this guy off. So, yeah, I would say, and in saying that, he's still young enough that he can take this and – As he's raising his MVP defensive MVP trophy,
there you go.
You can say, Vikings territory, take that. But yeah, he's clearly an underachiever, because if he wasn't an underachiever, he'd be having a great second contract and he'd still be in New Orleans. So,
is he signed for just 1 year, or is he?
They got I think 1 year. They're giving him like $12 million. It might be one of those 2 years. Sort of like Zadarius. Zadarius was like a 3 year, but it was all. I think it was all shrouded in. You knew it was only going to be 1 year.
Yeah. That's a prove it year for him, I guess. But 12 million. You don't really have to prove anything. You're all right.
Well, yeah, but I guess they live in a little different world. Like I would take 12 million and I think I'd retire and
right.
I would tip my cap and say, thanks for the memories. But these guys, if you prove that you're good at 12 million and you're an edge rusher, someone's going to be giving you 20 million. And then at his age, much more than that. So,
well,
Mark, they live in a slightly, they're not doing a podcast on Memorial Day morning. So,
no, they're not.
Mark, a little different world.
Mark and I can't retire yet, but we can retire for the day. And that'll do it for us this week on the Vikings Territory Breakdown podcast. Thanks, Mark, for your insight. Thanks, Stephanie Walden behind the scenes, pitch hitting for her husband who's out on Lake Minnetonka in a sailboat somewhere. So hopefully he
can. Slacker.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Thanks, Stephanie. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We appreciate it each week. Love to have you. Check us out. And thanks, as always, to our buddy Joe Johnson, who got this all started. And we're thinking of him this weekend on Memorial Day. Weekend, Memorial Day, actually, we're taping this. So, Joe, here's to you. Thanks, and we'll see y'all next week. Skol.
Skol.